He's not a wild cat, he's a wild dog. He's the feistiest burger-loving member of Team Arrow this season, and it's time to learn all about him because your geek history lesson is now in session. Hello and welcome to Geek History Lesson. I'm Jason Wild Dog Inman.
I'm Ashley Victoria Robinson. Welcome to Your Mind University because you have stumbled onto the podcast where we take one character, construct, or a guy in a hockey mask from popular culture and teach you everything you need to know about them in about an hour.
That's right. And what character are we covering today, Ashley?
Some guy called Wild Dog.
Yes. And real quick, if you're excited by this lesson or you are just raging mad because we picked Wild Dog as the subject of our lesson, you can go complain to us about it on Twitter. For me, it's at Jawin, J-A-W-I-I-N. And for Ashley, it's for at Ashley V. Robinson. So just quick, in case you listen to this podcast, you're like, I gotta complain right now. You can go do it over there.
Don't complain.
We were talking about Wild Dog because he's on Arrow Season 5. He's played by Rick Gonzalez. And he's sort of a kookier character in the DC universe. So we thought that this might be a good time to talk about him. And we want to tell you to make sure to stick around until the end of the episode for the discussion because we're going to be joined by Matthew Peterson.
What?
From Major Spoilers, Top 5, and the new Legion Clubhouse. But enough about legions, enough about wild dogs. Well, more about wild dogs, actually. Let's hop right into the 10-cent origin.
And the 10-cent origin is, of course, our cliff note introduction to the character where we give you all the basic constructs and creative facts about who Wild Dog is.
Wild Dog, of course, is published by DC Comics. His first appearance was in his own self-titled Wild Dog number 1 in September of 1987.
Ooh, lucky him.
Yep. He was created by Max Allen Collins and Terry Beatty. His alter ego is Jack Wheeler. Quite different from the Arrow TV show.
As it turns out.
And his team affiliations are the United States Marine Corps, and his abilities are he's an expert marksman and a hand-to-hand combatant. Now, some of you might have just noticed, like I said, a lot of that sounded different than what you've heard on Arrow Season 5. The Arrow Wild Dog is kind of a different character. They kind of just took his name of Wild Dog and gave it to another character. He's not really the same guy. We'll touch on Arrow a little bit, but since they're so different, I didn't think it was fair to like mash them into the same lesson.
That seems like a good idea.
So we'll get into that in a little bit. All right, let's go to the meet cute.
And the meet cute is the part of the podcast where we steal a term from romantic comedy writing and tell you the first time we met this character and how cute it was.
Ashley, how did you first encounter Wild Dog?
You said, I think Wild Dog is going to be on the next season of Arrow. And I said, who the hell is Wild Dog? And that would be the first time I had ever even heard of this character.
Well, I don't know if I ever said that because, to be honest with you, I actually was on Collider Heroes once and we were talking about the craziest characters that we never thought we would ever see in live action.
Oh, maybe that's how you said it.
And my answer was Wild Dog. And then literally the very next week they announced Wild Dog on Arrow.
Yeah.
and I remember me and John Schnepp being like, what the hell?
So is that that's not the first time you met Wild Dog, though?
No. I first met Wild Dog in Wizard Magazine, this old, amazing publication that existed during the 90s and the early 2000s where we talk about comic books, and I really miss it a lot. And in Wizard Magazine, they'd always do these lists of comics' stupidest or weirdest characters, and Wild Dog would always make it on the list. And I remember I liked his camel pants, and I like that I liked him so much, his weird look, that he sort of became my favorite obscure superhero. So whenever someone would say, like, oh, what's the weirdo hero? Or, like, what's something that'll never happen in the movies? I'd be like, Wild Dog. I was like, we'll never see Wild Dog in live action. They will never make.
Little did you know.
And now I'm completely wrong. But you know what? I'm glad to be proven wrong because we live in this weird golden age of geek. And, you know, I'd rather be wrong about this stuff than right. And, you know, that only holds out hope for Brother Geek. If anybody out there knows who Brother Geek is, get ready. All right, let's jump into History 101.
And History 101 is the main meat of the lesson where Professor Jason is going to impart every piece of knowledge that he has ever had about Wild Dog.
All right, fair warning. Wild Dog has not been in many comic books. About 33 to 35, somewhere in there, less than 40 comic books, in fact, in his entirety. Mm. So I will literally start by summarizing his very first series and some of the craziness within.
I am looking forward to this.
Okay. So this may be an episode on the shorter side. We'll see how long our discussion goes. But just warning you out there. There's not much Wild Dog out there, okay? All right. Now, Wild Dog number one starts in Quad Cities. That is a new fictional DC city that is actually 24 communities divided by two states and joined by one river. So it's kind of like Central City, Keystone City, kind of like Kansas City. Mm-hmm. So it's like two different cities separated by a river.
Sister cities.
Yes. And the reason why it's called Quad Cities is because there's actually like four different boroughs that are sort of all together.
I thought there were 24 boroughs.
There's 24 communities. It gets a little crazy.
That's silly.
This is page one of Wild Dog.
We're already invalidating our own geographical continuity.
Now in Wild Dog, Susan King. She's a reporter for Channel 7. Do you know Susan?
Not personally, but it seems like with every new DC superhero we meet, they get a reporter girlfriend. So, you know, we've probably seen each other around the office pool.
Okay. Well, Susan King, she's a reporter for Channel 7. Good channel. And she is doing an interview at the community center with Mr. Newell, who is the leader for the Committee for Social Change. Well, let me tell you a little bit about the committee for...
This sounds so riveting for a superhero comic.
I haven't even gotten two pages into the book here, so you have to let me actually get into it a little bit. The Committee for Social Change is actually a terrorist group, Ashley. It's not a committee at all. I don't know why they call themselves a committee.
Sigh.
And he says that he is about changing society, and he blows up the center right in front of Susan King on live TV.
That's evil.
Yep. Him and the committee, they take her and her crew hostage, and all the people of Quad City freak out except for Jack Wheeler, who is a mechanic who loves to listen to police bands and radio. Yep, he just has it. He just has it on.
Okay.
And he hears of the situation. Now, the police try to get their best negotiator to the scene as Jack Wheeler, now wearing a hockey mask and a jersey with a red dog on it, drives in his small two-door red pickup truck to the community center. He actually looks like a Toyota of some sort. Looks like a small Toyota Tundra.
I just want to say that he's not even wearing a hockey mask. He's wearing a goalie mask and the style that has not been worn since the 1960s. So, like, why do you just have this old goalie mask lying around?
Favorite memories. So the hostages and Susan King have been moved to a theater that is right beside the community center that, like, luckily didn't blow up.
Like a movie theater or like a stage theater?
It's a stage theater.
Okay, weird.
But they have pictures of movies outside, so just go with it.
I'm going with it.
All right.
Is Clayface there?
No. No other DC characters appear in this book. So Jack Wheeler, in his costume, he's driving towards the theater, right?
Yeah.
And he drives his truck straight through the main box office of the theater into the lobby.
I mean, I guess if you have a pickup truck, it's probably on the sturdier side as far as vehicles go.
I guess.
But your insurance is going to go through the roof. That accident was caused by him. And now he doesn't have a car.
Well, that accident,
I mean, I know he's a mechanic, but come on.
That accident wasn't caused by him because out of the truck walks Wild Dog. Full camo pants, camo boots.
His camo pants.
His machine guns and his jersey.
Where did he get machine guns?
You know, the store.
The store.
And
he's a mechanic. He built them.
Wild Dog starts shooting all the kidnappers, and the police call him a one-man SWAT team. Now, the next few pages of Wild Dog are just him shooting and kicking. He loves to kick. Kicking the henchmen until Wild Dog, he gets up into the balcony level, and he shoots a harpoon gun line down to the theater stage. And as he slides down to the stage, which on the stage is Mr. Newell and Susan King, he kicks Mr. Newell right in the face.
How many arms does he have that he can carry two machine guns and a harpoon gun?
Well, the two machine guns are actually, I have the specific model. They're coming up because they're a plot point later on. They are one-handed. They're smaller.
Right.
They're mini.
But still, that's one gun per hand.
Mm.
And then he's also got like a harpoon gun strapped to
his back. He has holsters. He can put them in holsters to shoot another gun.
I guess.
He
just seems like he's carrying a lot of weaponry.
He is.
Like
he went into
this with like a very high expectation of how much shooting he was going to be doing.
Yes.
I know you said he loves to kick, but he also seems to love
to
shoot.
He kicks a lot. He loves to kick. There's a lot of kicking by Wild Dog.
Okay.
Wild Dog either shoots or he kicks. He also has electrified stun gloves, but we'll get to those later. I don't know.
Okay.
Yep. So there you go. So he kicks Mr. Newell in the face, and he saved the day, or has he? Because Wild Dog then takes Susan King hostage, walks her all the way back to his truck, which, by the way, is fine, even though it crashed into a lobby, and he puts her in the truck, and he drives away with her so he can get away from the police.
Wow.
By the way, all of this is filmed on live television.
Of course it is. Why wouldn't it be? That's because she's a reporter.
Now, Wild Dog spends the entire time not talking to her at all. She tries to talk to him, doesn't talk to her.
That's very stoic of him.
And he drops her off somewhere outside of Quad City on some farmland. And Susan vows to find out his identity.
That's so rude. Just take her home.
And there you go. That is the first issue of Wild Dog.
I also like that he was compared to a SWAT team, and there seems to be nothing like... I wouldn't call him a particularly sneaky or, like, elegant superhero. You know, you think of a SWAT team as being sort of sneaky.
No, SWAT teams aren't sneaky at all. SWAT teams are like bulldozers.
But they sneaky in, and then they bulldoze out. He didn't sneaky in. He crashed into a lobby.
He's because he's a wild dog.
I guess so.
All right, now, in issue two, Susan spends a lot of time irritating cops and officials trying to get to the bottom of Wild Dog's identity. Seriously, it's like five pages.
Typical DC lady reporter. That's a very, like, Iris West, Lois Lane type move.
We then meet Graham, who will be very important to this book, who works for the ISA, which is the Internal Security Agency. He meets Jack Wheeler at his new garage, and you find out that they're old friends, and they went to college together, and Graham asks Jack Wheeler his thoughts on the new Wild Dog character, and Jack's basically like, I like his style. And then we see...
Sorry, what is he like?
I like his style. We then see Susan outside the garage, finding out that she is following Graham. Dun, dun, dun.
Ah.
Then at a high school gymnasium, students prepare themselves for the most boring high school assembly of all time as they get ready to listen to Dr. Mensa, who is a philosophy professor. But soon they find out that Dr. Mensa is wearing a bomb vest, and the real Dr. Mensa was murdered by the Committee for Social Change.
Still somehow the most boring assembly of all time.
Yep. But remember them from issue one?
I do remember. They're a terrorist group, not a social organization, as one may suspect.
And they're also a terrorist group made up of all white people. I'm just going to point that out. All white people.
Well, I'm just going to leave that thought right there.
Fake Dr. Mensa calls for backup, which allows for his henchmen dressed in bright red sweaters and bright green hoods to appear.
Christmas henchmen.
They are Christmas henchmen, yes. They look very much like the KKK. and Dr. Mensa calls these men his teaching assistants to the students.
Oh, no, we have those too.
Yep. Now, reports of this hostage situation go around.
Right.
Everybody in Quad City loves to watch or listen to the news, and they
and police scanners, apparently.
Well, they make sure that we all know this fact. No, only Jack Wheeler listens to the police
radio.
Oh,
that's how he's got an edge. That's why he's the only vigilante in this crime-ridden city.
So he hears about this on the police radio, of course.
Sure.
And then a police lieutenant named Andy, who will become important later, goes inside the school and decides to talk directly to Dr. Mensa. He's like, I'm going to negotiate with you, dude. Let's figure this out. But his brightly Christmas-colored thugs don't like that, and they throw him in a janitor's closet.
Is his last name Griffin?
I don't remember what his last name is.
Or Griffith.
No. I was like, Griffin, what are you talking
Sorry.
About?
Sorry.
All right. And then the police wait outside as the fake Dr. Mensa holds these hundreds of children. There are hundreds of children in this gymnasium.
What a big high school.
Hostage for hours. And I am not kidding about the time thing, because they make sure to tell you that it's been hours in a caption box.
Nobody, like Wild Dog is not that good a vigilante. The cops are not that good that they can go in and save everybody. So these poor kids are just sitting in this, you know, assembly on these bleachers. And they're like, I'm really tired.
Wild Dog's mechanic shop is on the other side of town.
I thought he was a one-man SWAT team.
He's only got a Toyota Tundra. It takes some time. He's got to go through traffic. He's got to stop for a coffee.
Or he's got to maybe crash it through the front of a building.
Oh, no. We're not going to crash anything through a building this time.
Okay.
Wild Dog, by mistake. Wild Dog sneaks to the roof of the gym.
See, this is very SWAT-y.
And with his handy harpoon grappling gun.
Oh, good.
He fires it down onto the stage next to Dr. Mensa and slides inside.
Woo!
Now, the thug shoots several rounds directly into Wild Dog's chest when he lands. And Wild Dog keels over and dies.
End of lesson on Wild Dog.
That's it. I'm not lying here. That is the end of Wild Dog. That's it. We're done. Thank you for listening. All right, the next section. No, I'm lying. He's wearing actually a bulletproof vest underneath his jersey. Even though that wouldn't stop the amount of projectiles that he gets, it doesn't stop Wild Dog, and he starts kicking all the thugs again.
I'm going to say that because he's a mechanic, he was able to somehow reinforce it in ways that we could not fathom.
You're giving mad props to the mechanics out there.
I am.
And that is not an insult to the mechanics, so please don't go to Twitter and start calling us racist against mechanics. You know who you are, one person. Okay. So Wild Dog is kicking these men so hard because he loves his kicking. He loves his sliding.
He's kicking them in the chest because he's like, you shot me in the chest, I'm going to kick you.
No, actually, he kicks one of them in the back, the way it's drawn, it looks like he breaks one of the badly dressed thugs back in half in one panel. And as he does that, the children, of course, cheer. They're like, yay, Wild Dog!
Family values. Yep.
Wild Dog picks up the unconscious Dr. Mensa and carries him out to a cornfield that is conveniently behind the school, where his truck is also parked. And then he takes the fake doctor to a barn, because Wild Dog likes barns.
What do you put in a cornfield? A barn.
Yep. He then calls the committee's henchmen on Dr. Mensa's walkie-talkie, and acting like Dr. Mensa, he's like, come to the barn, come find me. And when they show up in their badly Christmas-dressed outfits, they see Dr. Mensa tied up, and Wild Dog activates Dr. Mensa's bomb vest from afar, and they all blow up.
Aw, dead.
So actually, I want to ask you, what have we learned about Wild Dog so far?
He likes to kick stuff. He's got a crappy truck that he crashed, and
hey, Toyota Tundras are actually great trucks.
Has a really good frame because it didn't get ruined. He's got a reporter girlfriend.
Nope, they're not girlfriends. They've never talked.
He's got a reporter lady.
They've not said one word to each other.
A reporter lady and a grappling gun. And he is a really slow-to-respond vigilante.
Well, also, notice how many hostage situations take place in Quad City.
Yeah, Quad City is the Gotham of its state. Like, why would you live there?
Okay. All right, so let's keep going, and let's jump into the third issue. By the way, I want to tell you about a little thing that's kind of neat. Each of the covers of Wild Dog have this kind of neat subtitle that deal with the title.
Uh-huh.
So issue one is This is Wild Dog. Issue two is This is Wild Dog. Issue three is This is Wild Dog.
Stop it.
And issue four is You Are Wild Dog.
Stop.
Which doesn't make sense when I reveal what the fourth issue is.
I'm going to be completely honest. I don't know if I can handle the pressure of being Wild Dog. I can't kick that high.
There's a lot of kick. You have to be able
and
to
I've
kick.
And I've never driven a truck.
You've got to kick really good to be Wild Dog.
I think I could maybe handle the harpoon gun, but I don't know if I can handle the recoil.
Well, let's get into This is Wild Dog, which is actually issue three.
Okay, I'm looking forward, though, to You Are Wild Dog. I'm not going to lie.
Don't look forward that much. Okay. All right, This is Wild Dog Part 3 begins on a riverboat. Yep.
Are we gambling with tiny guns?
There's gambling around.
Little pea shooters.
There are four old Red Dog football players. Red Dogs are a college football team.
Sure.
And they share a drink. And the four people are Andy Flint, who is the police lieutenant I told you about in last issue.
Oh, yeah.
Graham, the government agent. New character, journalist Lou Goddard, and of course, our favorite mechanic, Jack Wheeler.
Mm.
Now, Graham, he's the government agent. He gives them all presents, and they all open it to reveal that Graham has given them pieces of the Wild Dog costume, which includes a jersey of the Red Dogs, which is the same jersey that Wild Dog wears, and it was the same jersey that all four of them wore as they were all football players on their college football team.
Oh, we should have explained that maybe in issue one.
No, this is the first time that is revealed. Graham reveals to them that with Wild Dog's stun gloves, and his Jatty submachine gun, which is a single-handed machine gun, by the way.
I see.
That Wild Dog is very well-trained, he has to be rich, and he has to be in shape. And he hoped that the gifts would shock one of his friends because he's like, I know that one of you is Wild Dog.
Well, I have to say, as far as deductions go, he's done a pretty good job in the space of three issues.
Yes.
To narrow it down to like three potential dudes, mm-hmm. He's doing pretty good.
By the way, it is also revealed that on the next table over where this is taking place in a very public arena in this riverboat, that reporter Susan King is nearby listening to the whole conversation.
Well, you know, you have to do important life events like this in a public arena because if someone is going to break down and cry, they won't do it in public.
That's right.
It's like breaking up with someone.
Now, Graham reveals that all of his friends have tragedies that could have turned them into Wild Dog. Classic vigilante origin, right?
Yep, yep, yep.
And so when the riverboat lands at Arsenal Island, it's actually an island where a lot of weapons are manufactured, and he's brought
them... Is that where Roy Harper lives?
Nope. He's brought them there because he's hoping that the terrorists will attack and reveal one of his friends to be Wild Dog. Mm. Graham then grabs Susan King by the arm, and he says, please, why don't you join us, Miss Susan? And reveals her to all of his friends. And he was like, I saw you the entire time. You weren't hiding anything,
Susan.
You know,
Graham doesn't seem like such a good guy anymore.
Graham is kind of, I'll tell you what, Graham is very written like in this book like Sherlock Holmes. He has a pipe that he smokes
oh,
from.
Oh, really?
He makes a lot of deductions. He's actually a good guy, but he has no social graces.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay,
that's fair. I understand now.
Yes. Soon the Committee for Social Change does take over the whole island.
Oh, those guys.
And the riverboat. And out of nowhere, Wild Dog shows up. He starts kicking them. He starts breaking backs. And he starts unloading his bullets.
He's just a big fan of Bane. So he's like, I'm going to break yep. your back. I'm going to break your back.
At one point, the Committee for Social Change chases him into an old weapons museum.
Mm-hmm.
And they think they have him cornered. But he starts taking out some of these old weapons and muskets and starts blowing them away.
Well, he's lucky they still have their structural integrity yep. after these many centuries.
He then kills all of the committee members and then blows up the very riverboat that he came to the island on to kill some of the terrorists.
No, the yep. pleasure cruise.
And then no one can find Wild Dog except for the clothes that he left behind. Because they show a panel where, like, Wild Dog's uniform is laying on the ground and Jack Wheeler's not on it, in it.
Oh.
It's kind of weird.
That is weird.
All right. Let's talk about issue 4.
I am Wild Dog.
You are.
I am.
You are Wild
I
Dog.
I am Wild Dog.
No, you are Wild Dog.
I am.
No, you are Wild Dog.
You're going to learn that Wild Dog is a little Canadian.
Nope.
I'm so excited.
Issue 4 begins with Susan King reporting about all the boat deaths. And confronting the police about it in a conversation with Graham on the boat, and Graham accusing them to be Wild Dog.
Mm.
So she's like, she's going to the police, and she's like, "What's going on here? I know one of you know." Blah 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 blah. She confronts Graham.
Yeah.
All of the four friends begin to suspect the other as Wild Dog until journalist Lou Goddard reveals that it has to be Jack Wheeler. Why does it have to be Jack Wheeler? Well, he says because Jack Wheeler peaked in high school. He was a linebacker who dated the prom queen, then suffered an injury that ended his football career. He then joined the Marines, and then while he was on a mission in Beirut, his buddies were killed by terrorists. The two, Lieutenant Andy and Lou Goddard, basically put two and two together that Jack is Wild Dog because he always felt more at home with machines than he did with real-life humans, hence the reason why he's a mechanic.
Wow, you can really tell from that story point what the writer thinks about people who peak in high school.
Yep. And then we learn the secret origin of Wild Dog. So Jack Wheeler returned to Quad Cities after the Beirut mission. He began taking night classes, and he started dating a fellow student named Claire, who he fell in love with.
Aww.
His new girlfriend soon began experiencing accidents and was ultimately shot dead in front of Jack while the pair were on a date. Afterwards, it was revealed that she was secretly the daughter of a Chicago crime boss who left her family to start a new life for herself. Claire's will, and remember, she was just his girlfriend.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Named Jack as her sole beneficiary, which made him a considerably wealthy man.
All right. How long were they dating? Because, I mean, if they were like, they were dating for a couple of years, I would understand that. But
it seems like a couple years.
Okay, so it doesn't seem like a 3-week thing. I'm going to put you in my will just in case.
No, they it seems like a couple
Very
years.
Very serious. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, yeah, but still.
Now, Jack gets furious after all the deaths he's witnessed, his buddies, Claire, stuff like that, and he's unsure how to proceed. And Jack took the advice of a friend who once told him to use the money to fight the mob. So he opens his own car mechanic body shop as his public identity, and then secretly he tracks down the rival gang members who ordered the hit on Claire. He creates a costume of camouflage pants from his uniform, combat boots from his uniform, and his old college jersey that is emblazed with a snarling red dog that hides his protective body armor and a hockey goaltender mask to conceal his identity. He's armed with Jatty-matic GG95 PDWs. Those are single-handed machine guns and a pair of electrified shock gloves. And he kills all the gang leaders and the hitman who killed Claire.
I have to say, if you are advising people to use their fortune to take down the mob, you're maybe not a good friend.
Lieutenant Andy, his police friend, confronts Jack, showing him a picture of Wild Dog on Arsenal Island wearing combat boots. And he says, like, I know you're Wild Dog because you were the only one on that day wearing combat boots. I gotcha.
Ah, it sounds like a good chase.
Yep.
strange.
Jack says that he could use a police contact as Wild Dog, and then the police radio goes off telling of another terrorist attack, and Jack puts his buddy on the spot. Will you arrest me, or will you help me? And the miniseries ends on a giant cliffhanger.
Wow, that seems like a weird place to end your miniseries.
Yeah, that's right. But you know what will never end in a cliffhanger?
I don't know what will never end on a cliffhanger.
Geek history lesson.
Yes.
Well, that's only if you help us over at patreon.com/Jawin, J-A-W-I-I-N, because we can always use your help with server costs, research time, general tomfoolery, and we'll give you an extra Patreon-exclusive podcast called Geek History Lesson Extra, which is 20 minutes or so of just us talking more that you can only hear for your trouble. Just $5 a month. That's the price of a coffee and one cookie in Quad City at your favorite coffee place. So go over to patreon.com/Jawin and help us out, and we promise that we will never end this podcast on a cliffhanger. And thank you to our lovely Patreons who help keep this show going.
Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Now back to Wow Dog. So what happened? What will his cop friend Andy do?
Turn him in because he's a good police officer.
Well, luckily, the Wild Dog got a special released, just called the Wild Dog Special or Wild Dog Cage. but between the miniseries and the special, Wild Dog actually started regularly appearing in Action Comics Weekly.
Oh, no way.
And you know who's a big expert on Action Comics Weekly?
I don't.
Our guest professor, Matthew Peterson. So let's talk to Matthew Peterson a little bit about Action Comics Weekly and what Wild Dog got up to in it. All right, now, Matthew, we mentioned that Wild Dog appears in Action Comics Weekly. And very briefly for our listeners, in case they don't know, can you explain what is Action Comics Weekly?
Certainly. Basically, it kind of goes back to the Crisis on Infinite Earths in 1986 that reset the whole DC universe. And Action Comics is, of course, that central pillar of the Superman mythos. In 87, after the Crisis, they were ready to try something super new. So instead of 22 pages of Superman each month, Action Comics became a weekly book with rotating anthology features. So each month you would pick up an issue of Action Comics and you'd have, well, at the beginning, it started out with a 2-page Superman story. And let me just say that a 2-page weekly story of anybody is maddening. Getting 2 pages a week. Oh, my God, it made me want to smash everything. But you'd pick up an issue of Action Comics and you'd get a story with the Secret Six, with Black Hawk, with Dead Man, Green Lantern, who at the time was not only not in his own book, but not really a high profile guy. And then you get things like Dead Man and the Demon and rotating lesser known figures, and Wild Dog coming out of his limited series was one of the anchors of the first few weeks of Action Comics Weekly. So basically, you'd get a 45-page comic book, or 42, and you'd have 8 pages of Wild Dog and 8 pages of several other features.
That actually sounds really awesome. I mean, as a person who really hardcore loves 52, that weekly series, like, Action Comics Weekly, bring it back, DC.
Well, there's two problems. The big problem that you come into is American audiences and anthologies have a very, very contentious relationship.
That's true, yeah.
You know, we saw it with Marvel Comics when they did their Marvel Comics Presents as a weekly series. It eventually turned into Wolverine and 4 other features. And Action Comics Weekly, you know, they struggled because as much as I love the new Secret Six, as much as I love Dead Man, as much as I tolerated Chaykin's Black Hawk and, you know, your Wild Dog, it didn't necessarily hook everybody. And especially at a time when comics were 75 cents, you were paying $1.50 for 48 pages of Action Comics.
So a little bit on the pricier side for the time.
Yeah, basically. A triple size comic for double the price, but if you're buying a triple size comic and you only care about Wild Dog, that's 8 pages out of 64 or 48. So,
well, speaking of Wild
Dog, it can be troublesome.
Speaking of Wild Dog, what is his story? What happens to Wild Dog in the Action Comics Weekly? Because he's in quite a few issues.
Yeah. Jack Wheeler, I don't know if they, you know, secretly Wild Dog. Jack Wheeler actually has three major arcs in Action Comics Weekly, beginning with the first issue of Action Comics Weekly. And strangely enough, one of the few guys to make it almost to the end.
Wow, really?
Yeah, they went 40 issues, 601 through 641 of Action Comics are the ACW issues. In that first arc, we see Wild Dog basically retired. He's been told by his friend, the police officer, you can no longer operate in my quad cities here in Iowa and Illinois, which is totally a real thing and not made up like Metropolis. It's true, actually. But a strange group called the Legion of Morality shows up in the Quad Cities and starts blowing things up in the name of wiping out smut. Now, because it's a DC comic in 1988, they don't actually have smut. There's no Penthouse or pornography. They're actually trying to take down issues of Vogue and Cosmopolitan.
Oh, I figured it would be like a magazine called Smut.
Smut, yes. Yeah, Smut the magazine. And Wild Dog has to fight the Legion of Morality. Now, I don't know if you've mentioned this. In 1988, this was really, really shocking stuff. In that first Legion of Morality story, Wild Dog kills literally dozens of people. He shoots them dead in the street.
Yes, and in his miniseries we talked about, because he fights the Committee for Social Change. Mm-hmm. And he does a lot of kicking, and he loves to shoot like small arrows into people's necks.
He actually takes out his little gun, which, by the way, is a real gun. I did not know this.
Yeah, it's a real submachine gun. Yeah.
He took his submachine gun and shot a bunch of people dead. But at the end of the arc, he did not kill the man behind the Legion of Morality. Now, he killed nearly all of the Legion of Morality members. What he did was he made sure that the Legion of Morality leader's girlfriend knew that this guy killed her son. So the last appearance of this arc is her with a knife walking into the bedroom where the evil leader of the Legion of Morality is lying and smugly talking about how he just beat Wild Dog and is still alive.
Interesting. So we
dozens of dead people.
So we sort of give a cliffhanger, but yet not quite a cliffhanger, because the first miniseries ends on a cliffhanger.
Yeah, and the thing about it is there's a level of brutality to these stories that really kind of presages the 90s. I mean, this is just a couple of years after Wolverine started chopping people up. This is before everybody was grim and gritty and wearing leather and claws. So that was, you know, pretty shocking. And then, of course, the second arc starts in Action 615. They did 9 issues. Then they took a few issues off and another story rotated in. They came back with the Night Slasher, the story of a serial killer in the Midwest that opens with Wild Dog showing up at a convenience store where three men are robbing the convenience store. So he shoots them in the knees and then leaves them to die. And during this arc, he gets sort of a sidekick.
Interesting.
Because Wild Dog shtick is basically all store bought.
Is his sidekick Angry Cat?
No, he's a little boy called Wild Pup.
Okay.
And Wild Dog wants nothing to do with him, but since he's just wearing, you know, a Red Dog shirt off of the university racks and a mask that you could buy in any hobby shop, the kid goes and buys the same costume and follows Wild Dog around on a scooter.
Oh, man.
And keeps getting involved. The kid nearly gets killed twice, finally ends up getting stabbed by the serial killer. And Wild Dog and the serial killer come to an agreement. They come to an understanding about both being evil killers. They accept each other, and the serial killer ends up at Wild Pup's bedside as he recovers from being stabbed in the heart by her in battle with Wild Dog. It's kind of a muddled metaphor.
Yeah, it's pretty cruel, too.
Yeah. But, of course, this holds nothing to the pièce de résistance. The pied de terre, the palm de terre, if you will, of Wild Dog. Issue 636 through 641 finds cocaine making its way into Iowa.
Oh, man.
And Wild Dog fighting local coke dealers only to find out that they're not really the problem. Their upline is the problem. And then they find that the guys selling them the drugs aren't the problem. And he traces it back to a boardroom in Chicago. And this arc ends with Wild Dog walking into the boardroom. Now, I don't know if you know this. Superheroes like to use their powers. Superman uses his heat vision. Batman uses his batarangs. Iron Man uses his checkbook. Fighty, fighty, fighty. Wild Dog walks into the boardroom and shoots 9 people dead. Because that's his power.
His power is bullets, yeah.
His power is bullets. So this arc basically is kind of an attempt to do realism, gritty realism, where these are real issues and real people being dealing with, you know, drugs and the problems that come with them. And it ends with a vigilante shooting people dead. And of course, at the end of that arc, his friend in the police, Lieutenant Flint, tells him that he has to knock it off. Wild Dog is hanging up his mask, and it ends with Wild Dog winking to the camera, Silver Age Superman style, and going, "Sure, until you need me again." Wink, wink.
So that was very informative about Action Comics Weekly. So let's get to some Wild Dog special.
Heck
okay?
Yeah.
Now, this is a one-shot. And in this one-shot, you find out that Jack Wheeler's friends, Lou and Lieutenant Andy, blackmailed old Jack Wheeler to hang up the mask 3 months ago, and he did. So 3 months have passed.
Wow.
So Graham figures it out separately of the other two, and he confronts Jack Wheeler, and he's like, "I don't want Wild Dog to stay dead." And he's like, "Hey, there have been some bank robbers that have been going around taking hostages and stuff like that, and their leader is a former ISA agent, you know, the agency that I work for, and we can't let that embarrassment out. So if Wild Dog happened to kill this guy, we'd be fine with it."
Jack Wheeler has terrible friends.
Yes, he does.
They're awful. They're like, "You know what you should do? Like, go be a vigilante and maybe die. That would be super great. Thanks, bro. Love you."
So Jack Wheeler is like, "I like your style of thinking." So he suits up as Wild Dog. He hunts down the bank robbers and he kills them. At the same time, remember our old friend Susan King?
I sure do. She's a reporter.
Well, she sleeps with a man and basically tells the same man in bed that she's like, "You know, I know who Wild Dog is. It's one of these 4 dudes that I met on a riverboat."
Oh my God.
Well, she doesn't know that that man is a man known as Catcher. He's a man who works for the mob, who works for some connections that had to do with Wild Dog's old girlfriend, and they want Wild Dog dead.
Well, yeah, that seems to be the thing
because,
right now.
Because remember, Wild Dog got revenge.
So
the Catcher kidnaps Lieutenant Andy and forces Wild Dog to a warehouse. The Catcher gasses Wild Dog when he arrives and delivers him to the mob, and Jack wakes up in a cage. He gets out of the cage because he electrifies it with his shot gloves.
Ah.
And he kills all of the men, and then the Chicago mob boss gets real mad when he finds out that Wild Dog escaped. And that's it. We end on another cliffhanger.
Wild Dog, why you gotta do that to me, bro?
So what do we learn so far, Ashley?
Wild Dog likes to kick people. He's a big fan of Bane. He's got a harpoon gun. He has friends who give him terrible advice. And he doesn't get to kiss the reporter girl.
That's right. Reporter girl is not a romantic interest. Only the terrorists get to kiss reporter girl.
Weird. Very weird.
All right. But also, like, yeah, it deals with hostage situations, and every book ends on a cliffhanger.
Yeah.
Okay. So Wild Dog from here, he just has some other random appearances, which include Wild Dog was present at the Great Summit during Invasion, where the heroes of the world gathered under the leadership of Captain Atom to strike back at the Alien Alliance. Wild Dog also had something to do when Lobo came to New York City and fought against DC Comics editor Mike Carlin.
Weird.
Yep. And Wild Dog was a part of a team of seldom used heroes and villains sent after him. The random selection of heroes included Black Condor, El Diablo, Garen Beck, Human Flea, Strata, Velvet Tiger, and Wonton. Some of your favorites.
All of my favorites.
He also took part in the Battle of Metropolis during Infinite Crisis, where he teamed up with Crimson Avenger and Vigilante to take down the Madmen and the Trigger Twins. They gunned both of them down on the rooftops.
Mm.
And then also he appeared in Booster Gold. During one of the Booster Gold storylines, Booster Gold created an alternate timeline where he went back in history to save his friend Blue Beetle from being murdered by Maxwell Lord. In this alternate world, Lord had taken over the planet using a mentally controlled Superman and his personal army of Omax. Now, what are Omax, Ashley?
Omax are basically weird robots.
They're weird blue robots, and Omax is actually an acronym, stands for One Man Army Corps.
Yep.
Now, there was a small resistance force of heroes fighting to stay alive led by Green Arrow and Hawkman, which included Anthro and Panther and Wild Dog. With Booster's help, they made their final assault on Checkmate headquarters, and during the fighting, Lord used his mind control abilities to force Wild Dog to shoot Panther and then shoot himself in the face. And of course, Booster Gold fixed the timeline, so that timeline never happened. And most recently, Wild Dog has actually shown up. Wild Dog's in a comic book right now. He is in Young Animals' Cave Carson Has a Cybernetic Eye, and he showed up in issue 2 or 3, I believe, and he helped Cave. He's helping Cave Carson to remember his life and save his daughter.
Wow.
So, yeah. So he's currently in comic books right now.
That's what being on a TV show will do for you.
There you go. And now to talk a little bit about Arrow, because that is all of the comic books of Wild Dog.
Okay, let's talk about Arrow.
Okay. Now, Wild Dog is a recurring character in the 5th season of Arrow. He's portrayed by actor Rick Gonzalez. Mm-hmm. And in Arrow, Wild Dog is the alias of Rene Ramirez, who is a reckless young vigilante and former Navy sailor who is inspired by Green Arrow's crusade. Though Green Arrow initially orders Wild Dog to stop interfering with his work and throws an arrow into his knee, he eventually takes Rene under his wing and trains him. So essentially, he's a brand new character, and also in the show, he has a big love of giant Big Belly Burgers.
Yes, that is true.
All right. So that's it for Wild Dog, and let's move into our recommended reading.
Yes, the recommended reading is the part of the podcast where we recommend stuff that you can read. You can find our entire catalog of everything we've ever recommended at geekhistorylesson.com/recommended reading. You go there, you click on the widget, you buy something, and a little bit comes back to your mind university.
Now, this was a little bit difficult for some of these choices because there isn't a lot of Wild Dog out there.
I would imagine. I don't even know if it's all in print.
What I'm going to recommend to you is you can get issue 1, which is a choice. You can buy it digitally through Comixology, through Amazon.
Nice.
And through your Kindle. You can buy issue 2, both of them called This is Wild Dog, by the way. Lots of kicking, lots of harpoon gunnings. And then there's also the trade of Cave Carson Has a Cybernetic Eye. It comes out in a couple of months, but he's in it. And he's in the book quite a bit. He teams up with Cave Carson, so it's probably the most prominent Wild Dog has been in a long, long time.
Great, great.
All right, so let's move into the discussion.
Yes, where we are going to discuss all kinds of cool stuff about Wild Dog.
Now, you've heard him on the podcast before, and he's back. The host of Major Spoilers, Top 5, and the new Legion Clubhouse. Let's talk some Wild Dog to Matthew Peterson. Now, Matthew, I want to know, where would you rank Wild Dog in the DC universe? Like, would you consider him to be, is he a D-list character, or is he, like, even further, is he a G-list character?
Well, I don't like to denigrate people with rankings, but he's definitely, he's what we call a level gamma. He's
okay.
If you were okay, so you got your Superman level characters. That's your Batman, your Green Lantern, your Captain Marvel, your Wonder Woman. Then you have your secondary guys, which I would say the Flash just graduated to the A from that secondary list.
Yeah, mainly because that of the secondary TV show. List. Yeah,
sure. You got that. I think is where you find your Aquaman, your Robin. You move your way down. You have like your Teen Titans and your Legion of Superheroes, and a couple of tiers below that, I think, is where you'd find Wild Dog. He's almost a fad kind of guy. You know how you'll have a character who, like Rocket Racer in the Marvel Universe. Rocket Racer spun out of, hey, these kids really love their skateboards. Oh, no. Here's what it is. Do you know who the Razorback is?
No, I don't. Is he from Arizona?
No, Razorback is a Marvel hero. He's from Alabama, I believe, who is a CB superhero from the 70s with mutant powers, who's made 24 appearances. Wild Dog is DC's version of that, maybe a step up from that, because he's about that frustration of the 80s boiling over into Charles Bronson style murder spree. So I would say sub D list, not quite down to the F's, maybe F plus.
Well, if Wild Dog is this character of his time, he's this like almost pre the super violence of the 90s comics kind of character. Why do you think he's still around. Like, why do you think, because I've kind of always known who Wild Dog was. Like, Wild Dog has always been, like, kind of joked as, but joked as is, like, a jokey character. But now we're living in a universe where Wild Dog is on Arrow, Wild Dog is in Cave Carson, this big imprint at DC, and next year we're probably going to end up with a Wild Dog action figure. Why do you think Wild Dog is still around 20, almost 30 years later?
My easy answer is the visual. The visual of a man in a hockey jersey with a mask and combat pants is simple and perfect. It's like the Creeper. The Creeper is such a strange visual, but people keep bringing him back because they remember seeing the Creeper. They remember seeing these characters. And just that image of the man in that full helmet with the weird Finnish submachine gun and the combat boots and the pants, that sticks with people the same way that, you know, you'll buy a comic and look at it and go, hey, why is Goofy wearing long johns and a cape? And 40 years later, I still love Super Goof. That may just be me. I don't know if everybody loves Super Goof, but I think part of it is the visual. It's a strong visual. And especially in today's, let's make it into a TV show, let's make it into a movie thought process. It's a very easy to translate visual. Like the amount of work they had to put into Barry Allen as a character, that Barry Allen costume that's so perfect on a Murphy Anderson or Carmine Infantino page, they had to put a ton of work into it to make it work in live action. And as we've seen, it works on TV. I think that the movie Flash looks utterly ridiculous. Basically the same take.
And I'm just the opposite. That's funny.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's all about what you really look at and what you appreciate. I don't know. For some reason, that movie Flash just makes me go, you're trying too hard, Ezra Pound. Stop that.
But I see what you're saying with Wild Dog, because he's essentially just wearing a jersey and a hockey mask.
Yeah. And it's a really great, strong visual. And it comes from a time that it feels even still modern, even though this is 30 years ago that he was created. There's something about it that just feels like he fits right in with modern character designs. And he fits right in with the expectation that a superhero now does have to be realistic or more believable than the days when, you know, you'd put on pants and call yourself the Blue Buffoon or something. I think that part of it is the art, and part of it is the fact that they really tried to tie the character to a time and place where, well, I'm not going to make too many parallels, but there are parallels between your socio-political expectation of 1987 and your socio-political expectation of 2016, 2017. There are similarities in the way society worked, and I'm old, so I can say that. But I think that he looks really, really modern and really cool. And you don't have a whole lot of superheroes who run around in camouflage pants. So
it's true. Yeah. Now, back in 87, in the mid 80s, when Wild Dog was created, do you think there was a niche he was filling, or was that the creators seeing this trend of heroes becoming more and more violent in the 90s early?
Well, the writer who created Wild Dog. Yeah, that's cool. I'll have Mild Dog.
Is the other sidekick.
I'll have a Mild Dog and some salsa.
Max Collins actually is the man who created Ms. Tree, which is a very violent and kind of wonderful series. And for a long time, he was writing Dick Tracy, and Collins believes in kind of a hard-boiled crime bullety, fighty-fighty aesthetic. And I think that that really works. That's almost universal, because you can go back to, you know, your pulp stories of the 1930s and see the influences that come into Wild Dog. But he was definitely ahead of his time. You know, 1987 was the year of the first Punisher miniseries at Marvel. Within 5 years, the Punisher was everywhere. He had four monthly titles. He was one of Marvel's top tier sales guys. I think Wild Dog was ahead of his time and didn't quite mesh with a DC universe that was just barely coming out of Bronze Age silliness and still had elements of Silver Age wackadoodlery here and there. So I think that Wild Dog was something that, had he come out in 1996, Wild Dog might have been a huge deal. We wouldn't be talking about a limited series and, you know, three runs in Action Comics Weekly. We might be talking about 150 issues. So
interesting. Well, since Wild Dog has been brought back in comics and Arrow, I wanted to ask you, you are a comic book knowledge dynamo. So I want to ask you, what are there any other strange or forgotten 80s DC characters like Wild Dog that you would like to see come back in the comics or show up in the CW universe?
Oh, this is a bad thing to ask me, because you know what I would love to see? Do you remember Legion? It started as Legion 89, rolling out of the Invasion crossover. It was Vril Dox, the son of Brainiac, later revealed to be the adopted son, leading this extra governmental, almost fascist police force in space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they had a whole bunch of weird characters, and Captain Comet. Mon-El was in it for a while, or Largand Valor, I believe is what they called him post-crisis. The Superman office took all their stuff away from the Legion people. Big meanies. But I would love to see Legion 89, the licensed extra-governmental interstellar operatives network, because I think that it would be a really good gateway to a Legion of Superheroes book. And I also think that fans of something like Suicide Squad, I really think that Legion could appeal to those type of fans.
Interesting.
Two years ago, I would have said Suicide Squad. That came out in 86, rolling out of Legends. I love that.
Mm-hmm.
5 years ago, I might have said Firestorm. I mean, all of the weird 80s stuff is coming back. The Vigilante is on TV.
Yeah.
We have a story where both of the big high-profile deaths from Crisis on Infinite Earths are, in fact, TV stars on the CW right now.
Yeah.
Because issue 7, they killed Supergirl. Issue 8, they killed The Flash. And that was like, they killed The Flash, you guys. I mean, granted, he has a sidekick with the exact same powers who took up the costume and did the exact same thing. But they killed The Flash, you guys. If I had to pick somebody who wasn't Legion related, which some people would force me to do, I might say Secret Six, the second Mockingbird incarnation. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The one with Catman and stuff?
No, actually before that.
Oh, interesting.
The original Secret Six is from 1967, and it was six people, just regular people, sort of, from various walks of life who were being blackmailed by a mysterious man called Mockingbird for their skills. So they had a boxer and a scientist and a spy and an escape artist, and they were all brought together and taken out as like this kind of expendable team of people. And then in 87, they brought back that concept and they brought six more people together, and Mockingbird blackmailed them. One of them was visually impaired, so Mockingbird gave him cybernetic eyes. One had lost his legs in an accident, so he got cybernetic legs. But if they ever displeased Mockingbird, he would turn off their devices and leave them without their support. It was terrible. It was mean-spirited and awful, and it rained for some really good stories.
Matthew, thank you so much, man, for talking to us about Wild Dog.
No problem.
When we're not writing CW television shows, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me on the Twitter at Mighty King Cobra. I believe if you know how to get on the Tumblr, it's the same thing, at Mighty King Cobra. My Tumblr is called A City Much Like Newark, I believe. Don't look for me on Facebook. I'm boring there. And of course, always, you can come and visit www.majorspoilers.com. Check out all the things we do. We have a bunch of cool podcasts. I don't know. Yours is one of them.
Yes.
Right
and,
now.
And don't forget the new Legion Clubhouse podcast, all about the Legion
right?
of Superheroes.
I'm very happy with that one. Steven and I are trying to put so much into that and trying to make sure that it is really something new and different and exciting. And also, on Sundays, I'll review old comics. Someday I might get around to Wild Dog.
Oh, man.
And by Sunday, I may mean this afternoon, because I'm thinking what I need to write next week.
Well, there you go. Thanks for joining us on Geek History Lesson, Matthew.
Oh, no problem.
And that was a great discussion with Matthew Peterson about Wild Dog and other weird characters in the DC universe.
Heck yeah.
I'm always impressed by Matthew's knowledge. Thanks for joining us, Matthew. And go check him out on the interwebs.
All over the internet.
All right, so let's get into the last section of our podcast, the Teaching Tweet.
Where in 140 characters or less, Professor Jason is going to sum up everything he just taught us about Wild Dog.
He likes to kick people, harpoon them, and shoot terrorists. If you have a hostage situation, call Wild Dog.
Sounds like an advertisement.
Well, I mean, you know, he has a lot of very similar, he does the same thing.
He's got an MO for sure.
And that is it for the Wild Dog episode. We hope you had a wild, wild time. Guys, don't forget to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and more. And when you go over to iTunes, don't forget to leave us a review because it helps other listeners find the show just like you. And when you do that, we're going to read them on the show.
That is true. We will do that.
We have one here from Isbelita200. Ooh. She says, this is the best podcast. And my recommended hearing would be the Dick Grayson episode and the two Teen Titans episodes. When you finish those two, you will binge everything. Hope you give it a try.
Yay! Thank you so much.
Those are two of my favorite episodes.
Mine too.
Two of my three, actually. So there you go. Actually, if they want to suggest future episodes like Wild Dog, because they didn't suggest Wild Dog, no one did. where could they do that at?
They can do that at facebook.com/geekhistorylesson and geekhistorylesson.com. There's a bunch of different places to contact us all over those.
And don't forget patreon.com/Jawin, J-A-W-I-I-N. That's where you can support the show and listen to the Patreon-exclusive podcast, Geek History Lesson Extra, this week. We're going to be talking about DC's strangest superheroes.
Ooh.
Now, you can find me on Twitter at Jawin, J-A-W-I-I-N, of course, and Ashley at Ashley V. Robinson. So, for Geek History Lesson, I'm Jason Inman.
I'm Ashley Victoria Robinson, and Professor Jason, please dismiss the class.
Well, class, we got her kicking in, we got her shooting in, we got our truck driving in. It's time to say a wild goodbye. Class is wild dog dismissed.